are listening to A One Pint Stand, a Minnesota craft beer podcast that tells the stories of craft beer in Minnesota and beyond. So kick back, relax, and grab a cold one. The show starts now. Hello, my name is Dan Bobian, and I write, produce, and host A One Pint Stand. I'm ecstatic that you're listening. This episode of A One Pint Stand is proudly sponsored by Town Hall Brewery. Town Hall Brewery sets the bar for excellence in brew pubs with their award-winning beers, delicious food, and wonderful wine and cocktails. They are the perfect place to sit down with a friend or loved one and create some great memories over conversation as you bask in their cozy brew pub setting. On this episode, I sit down with the team behind the Crowbar and Voliere Spirits, Greta, Liza, Regina, and Seth. We went down the rabbit hole of how the Crowbar came to be, as well as how their team has come together to create a visually remarkable place to enjoy balanced and accessible cocktails and mocktails at an extremely reasonable price. I think that when creative people come together to do something, the results can be pretty magnificent, and that is definitely the case with the Crowbar and their catalog of Voliere Spirits. So if you haven't been over there, I suggest you give it a try. It's over at the historic Hams building right next to St. Paul Brewing. So let's head out to the Crowbar for my conversation with Greta, Liz, Regina, and Seth. Cheers. Welcome to another on-location episode of A One Pint Stand. I'm your host, Dan Bobian. Today, I'm on the east side of St. Paul at the newly opened Crowbar, and I'm being joined by Greta, Liza, Regina, and Seth. I want to thank you all for taking time out of your day to sit down and chat. This is very fun. I've been looking forward to this ever since last June when I saw what this the initial bones of what this was going to be. And then when I was here, when you opened on Black Friday, I was very blown away by the ambiance. So thank you all for having me.
We appreciate you being here.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Just this is, I mean, on a snowy day when the roads are shit, this is what I want to be doing. Just sitting here talking with good people. So before we get into the nuts and bolts of our discussion, I'd love if each of you could introduce yourselves by saying your names, your roles, your favorite Voliere spirit, and in your mind, what is the perfect wintertime cocktail?
Okay, I'll kick it off. I'm Regina Clapp. I am co-owner. My favorite Voliere spirit right now is the coffee liqueur. It is delicious by itself or within a cocktail. My favorite winter cocktail is, I mean, you can't go wrong with an old fashioned. Big ice. Need to have big ice.
Hi, I'm Liza Strzelecki, and I am the other co-owner. My favorite spirit is our sky blue liqueur. It's a fun story. I'm a lover of chartreuse. And one night when we were all hanging out at my house drinking a lot of chartreuse, we decided that a botanical spirit might be something for us to do our own rendition of. Ours has 50 botanicals. It won't be released to the public until this spring for a spring awakening party. But my favorite cocktail to make with it would probably be a last word.
You should go next. You're the distiller.
I'm Seth. I'm the distiller here at Voliere Spirits. My favorite spirit right now is the rye whiskey, and I think a good rye Manhattan in the winter is pretty great.
Hi, I'm Greta, and I am the director of libations and elixirs here at Voliere Spirits. My favorite spirit of ours is the gin. I think it's incredibly versatile. And I guess my perfect winter cocktail is...
I'm not familiar with that one.
yeah, what's a cocktail?
Sounds French.
I suppose I've been really liking a version that we do here called the Baked Atasca. It's we do a little lingonberry infusion happening. It does feel very wintry and herbaceous simultaneously.
Okay, that's good. Those sound lovely. I'm excited about this sky blue, and this. I'm also excited to have a spring awakening because right? I've been waiting on that for 46 years, and I feel like this might just bring it out. From the first time I visited here last summer, Liza, you were so
nice to give me a tour of everything, because it'd been a while since I'd not been here since right after St. Paul Brewing changed hands. So that was kind of fun to come in and see all the new fun things happening. I got the tour. I had no idea how expansive this property was. And we're here. It's the old Hams Brewery site, kind of across the parking lot from the brewery where the Crowbar is. And there's just so much to see. And that tour was just, I mean, I'm still unpacking it in my head, all those games and how scary that was up there. I don't know how I think that was wild. But we walked through the same space that we're sitting in now, and it's unrecognizable. It's so nice in here. There's so many different things. There's so much different artwork. There's so many different lights. It's very comfortable and unique. So take me through that logistical journey, starting back from when 11 Wells changed hands, and now you've got Voliere Spirits, and then talk to me about the kind of the voyage of this cocktail room, the Crowbar, coming to fruition.
Sure. I think it's good for everyone to understand a little bit about the Hams campus in general, too. Regina and I were introduced by a great meeting that I first got to interact with her boss, or with my boss, who is her husband, Rob Clapp. Rob Clapp owns St. Paul Brewing. So okay. A really important designation to know is that this is a separately owned property, yep. Although it's on the same campus.
Okay.
The Hams campus goes back to the 1800s. It's an amazing campus. The brewery is located in what the historic like kegging room was, and it also, the patio includes the historic horse stables. We are in the painting and blacksmith shop that you're sitting in right now.
Okay.
And so that was an amazing opportunity for us to breathe some new life into some old bricks and kind of taking a space that we loved. We loved the raw features of this building, but bring some new life and bring some new vibrance into it. Regina, do you want to talk a little bit about your attraction to the building and the property in the first place?
Sure. So I've been in corporate America for the last 25 years, but I've been watching my husband, Rob Clapp, build these amazing businesses with Can-Can, with St. Paul Brewing, now with Dark Horse and Martha's Gardens. And when the opportunity came about, when 11 Wells was looking to sell their property, it was an amazing opportunity for me to kind of put my foot out there into something different. I have always loved the Hams complex as well, the history of this area. I think we say that there's, you know, history in these bricks, and we want to give new life to that history and allow people to come in and enjoy it. And so it was just a perfect right place, right time opportunity. And then I am so happy to be joined by this amazing team with all this wealth of experience in distilling and cocktails and hospitality to really round out what you're seeing here today.
Yeah. One of the things that really strikes me is, then you just kind of mentioned it, the whole team, there's a lot of talent just sitting here at this table. And then you widen it out that lens, and there's even more people. What's it like working with so many creative, talented people, and with so many things going on? Is it hard to find time to like sit down and come up with more ideas? Because you all are doing so many things.
Well, openings are exhausting, but I will tell you, it's a labor of love. I think that every single person from this team comes to work every day inspired and very excited by the reactions we're getting from guests that are coming into the space. When I'm talking to guests on the floor, I tell them that I think we've done everything that a traditional distillery cocktail room does and flipped it upside down and done the exact opposite. We have a space that feels very, very comfortable. It has artifacts and art pieces and collaborations that we love. We love that it's a space that you can come as you are. You don't have to feel like you have to be dressed upscale to enjoy our space.
Yeah, I'm wearing soft pants right now, and I feel very welcome. It's great.
We play vinyl. We have a vintage vinyl system and play music from decades, and not just obscure fancy vinyl. We play Backstreet Boys. We play Dua Lipa. We play music from the 70s, the 60s. I just picked up a new record that was Cowboy Jams from my Santa Fe trip that I'm excited to play this week. So nice. Music is a core part of what we do too. And then our creative team, Seth and Greta, do a beautiful job of creating spirits and creating expressions of those spirits that I think are unusual and really make guests emotive when they try them. So we're creating this experience where we want you to love the art, love the space, love the sound, love the vibe, love the service, love the warmth of what we are. And I think the team has done a beautiful job of creating warmth within the space that then is elevated by the beverages that we serve.
The Crowbar has been open a little over a month. Talk to me about, you know, what that was like opening. What's the feedback been like so far? I know that you said that you've heard a lot of things. What specifically are people really liking about what you've created?
I mean, we've been having a lot of folks keep coming back, which has been the most exciting part. That's exactly what we wanted, to create a neighborhood space. And also, we are a bit of a destination. But a space that people will feel comfortable and continue to come back to, regardless of whether or not they are choosing to imbibe with us. We hope that they will, but we have an equally impressive, I think, selection of zero proof options. So it really truly is a space for everybody. Every item on our menu is created with the same amount of attention and care and consideration for what people... What will bring people joy?
Yeah. What would you say if you had to put a number on it? Something you just mentioned is interesting to me. You know, as we wrap up 2025, I think we've seen in the craft beverage industry a larger number of people not drinking alcohol for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I think something that we owe it as an industry to people deciding to do that to still have a quality experience. Talk to me about, so one of the drinks on the menu, Regina, you pointed out to me before we started recording, what was it called? Beat?
The Heartbeat.
Heartbeat. Okay. A mocktail. Yes. Talk me through that and kind of just like, if you want to kind of take me step by step through your process of, first of all, when you set out to create a mocktail, obviously you're without one of the ingredients being alcohol. Mm-hmm. So how do you, what's your thought process as to still create something special and noteworthy that people will like?
I think most of the time when I'm thinking about any menu, I'm thinking about seasonality and availability of ingredients because that often informs what we are reaching for as a guest. For example, I mean, this one, the Heartbeat, which we'll continue to talk about, but it wouldn't land the same, I don't think, in the middle of August. We're not reaching for beets in August.
Unless Dwight Schrute rolls in.
Right. I
mean, and we could always be so lucky to meet him
in
person.
I could be wrong. Yeah, we could have some Dwights among us. I don't know. It's a winter vegetable. So when I was thinking about, because we also had several delays in when we were going to open. So yeah, with the Heartbeat, I was really inspired by the idea of cold soups. I was trying to figure out, oh, could I do a ceviche? And then I decided that was way too weird. but, you know, the proximity of, or the surrounding area of St. Paul, I was thinking about borscht. And I thought, you know, that would be, I bet I could do that as a shrub. And if you're not familiar with cocktail shrubs or...
Yeah, explain that.
But shrubs predate sodas by just thousands and thousands of years. They're called drinking vinegars. And they're often made with fruits, but you can make them with anything. And it's just equal parts of whatever fruit or vegetable you want to use. Some kind of vinegar and sugar. And you weigh those out and you let them macerate and chill out. They don't really expire because it's essentially a pickle.
Oh, okay.
And that's what gives it that beautiful tartness. Now, if you don't like vinegar or, you know, if you don't like kombucha, they might not be for you. But I find them, the salinity of a cocktail shrub is really beautiful to me. We tried it out and incorporated some balsamic vinegar in there for a little bit more roundness. And I think it really came together in a beautiful way.
I haven't seen a whole lot of beet-based cocktails lately. I know that beets had a moment in, like, 2012 where they were everywhere. But, yeah, that was my thought process there. We wanted to soften the extreme earthiness of
yeah,
red beets.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
And brought in some golden beets there, too. But it's just a beautiful color that feels very wintry. It stains my hand something crazy when I'm making it, but that's part of the fun.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And I think an important part to remember, Dan, too, Greta has to take the same logistics with our mocktails, with our cocktails, too, because we're a distillery right. cocktail room. So we yeah. can only utilize the spirits that we produce in-house to make the cocktails that we make.
Right.
I liken it very much, bartending, to be like cooking in the kitchen. You have if you're in a regular bar, you have a big spice cabinet, right? So yep. when you're making a cocktail, you can grab a little bit of this or that to sweeten something or bring more brightness or bring acidity. It's different here in a cocktail distillery room because we have to modify our own ingredients in every individual component. Greta and team have to make in-house. So yeah. I think she has that same thought process when she's making mocktails of what am I missing, what am I trying to make, and how can I bring those components to life? It's fascinating.
Seth and I have had a really wonderful partnership as we're thinking about how we want our spirits to, how we're going to use those spirits and what they need to be to maximize what we can do in the cocktail room. They're beautiful on their own as, you know, by design.
And how many total spirits do you make? Because, you know, something along the lines that you said, yeah, when you're a cocktail room, it's great if you're like, you know, a huge brand and you do all sorts of stuff. On the continuum of sizes of distilleries, you're probably on the smaller end.
Currently making 7.
Okay.
The product I was talking about, the chartreuse, is going to be 8.
Okay.
And we also, by spring, probably will have a couple more things that we have in the works right now out to public. Some things will be just for the cocktail room only, and some things will be for distribution.
Perfect.
There are things that we can sort of, if we need an ingredient for a particular cocktail that we'd like to feature, we can make a small amount of that wouldn't necessarily go to distribution.
Okay.
But we are...
So you can make small... You have the ability to make smaller batch things if it's for, like, a seasonal cocktail.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. But that wouldn't go to distribution. Everything else, as far as the cocktail program goes, is, made with our two hands in the back.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of cooking.
That's really interesting. What is the... What's the batch size? Like, what if you make a full batch of something? How many barrels is that, Seth?
So, based on our largest still and the alcohol by volume we ferment to, we're looking at about 40 cases, which are 6-pack 750s, which is a single proof gallon, about with the proof that we go to. So we're making everything 40 cases at a time.
Okay.
With the white spirits, it's a little less than that with the aged, with evaporation loss, but...
Sure.
That's...
And so you said 7 spirits currently.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the whiskey.
Yes.
Gin.
We have vodka, gin, white rum, dark rum, bourbon, and rye.
Okay.
Straight coffee bourbon. Liqueur.
And coffee liqueur.
Okay. When... I'm really curious about the synergy between Seth and Greta. So, like, when you're talking about you're coming up with ideas. Talk me through the process. Like, is it the spirit or the cocktail that comes first, or like what is that timeline?
It can go either way. You know, if I'm toying with something in the back and I ask her, "Can you use this behind the bar?" And she can, or we can tweak it from there. Or if she's got something she needs to fill in with by customer request, or somebody comes up with something fun, we build it out, test it out, do a lot of bench trials, and as a team, determine the flavor that's going to come out of that.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes we'll see things out in the wild, like with the curry bitters that we played with. I had seen curry bitters on someone's menu. And I said, "Seth, oh my God, can we play with that? Can we try?"
And 4 hours later, there were curry bitters.
So talk me through how to, you know, if somebody's listening and they're like, you know, I too would like to make curry bitters. How do you do that?
Well, you can come here and have ours. No.
Well, right. Yes. Well, that's what I'd say first, because before you go through all the trial and error. But if they're really stubborn and they want to try to do that, or is that a, can you really just make like any?
We actually have contemplated doing a bitters making class down the road. We have some educational.
See, I think that would be fascinating.
Yeah. There's a whole palette of bittering compounds that you can select from to get to the final profile you want. So you've got a bittering agent or three, and then your main flavor components, and you macerate them to the point where you like the flavor, and you just strain it out, and there you go. I mean, it's just a lot of botanical selection and working with the flavor profile you want from one end and the physical manufacturing on the other end. But you can make as little as 2 ounces, and that'll last for a long time at home, I'm sure.
Seth is our science nerd.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
That's just, I can tell. I'm the English major over here is trying to really wrap his brain around. I've already learned a couple terms. I've learned what shrub means. And everything I knew about shrubs came from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So now to hear it was like the world's oldest soda is interesting to me. Seth, how long have you been distilling?
So I joined 11 Wells in November 2014. I certainly wasn't distilling in my garage because that would be illegal.
Right. Nobody ever does that.
Nobody would ever do that. But I was working at Midwest Supplies doing product developing and marketing, and one of the original owners kept coming in and asking questions, and I had some answers, and we sat down and talked one day, and I joined the team, and they handed over the keys and said, "Figure it out."
Okay.
And that's, here we are.
Sounds both enjoyable and horrific all at the same time. what do you like about distilling?
I like the combination. I started in beer. I went to school for winemaking and grape growing. And, I really like the combination of, fermentation science, physical separation of things by heat, and then just tasting it as it comes through and it evolves over time coming out of the still, and then projecting what that's going to taste like in a couple of years in a barrel and selecting those ingredients and then blending everything down and, just kind of waiting for everything to come together.
I don't know a ton about distilling. I know that, there's certain cocktails I really like an old-fashioned, a Negroni, and I like bourbon. I'm just getting into Irish whiskey, but I'm most familiar with beer. And I know that I talk to a lot of brewers and, a batch of beer takes a couple of weeks from the time you brew it, to the time it's ready. You can taste it. It's like, ooh, we got to dial that back next time. It's not the same for distilling. Talk to me about the pros and cons of the different timelines between beer and spirits.
So with the white spirit, like our rum and our new rum process, we can turn that around in a week, 2 weeks.
Oh, wow, okay.
The gin is done in 2 days. It's like that, but you're sitting on aging spirits for 3, 4, 5, 6 years, 7 years. We've got 8-year-old whiskey upstairs. And you just, over time, develop a sense of how deep into the tails you want to get some of those longer aging products that'll esterify over time and create nuanced, fruitier flavors. And then you select different barrels. They all have their own personalities and blend them to get the kind of bandwidth, the character you're looking for.
Mm.
So you're just sitting around waiting for magic to happen.
Yeah. So if you're impulsive, maybe distilling is not the job for you. But if you've got, some sage-like wisdom, or you got a lot of things on Audible, you can let it happen and relax.
Right.
How often? So you said you've got things in barrels up there. How often are you tasting them to see how it's coming along? And so something you said earlier that kind of intrigued me was like projecting what a spirit is going to do. I know that, I guess with cooking, sometimes you're making a sauce and you know what it's supposed to taste like at the end, and you're like, you taste it, you're like, yeah, we got about another hour to go. Is that kind of like the same thought process when you are aging a spirit, or is it like, oh, it's got this last time my notes said it was doing this, so how do you know it's going to do continue on that trajectory?
It's a little of both. As a lot of the barrels have their own personality, I tend to get through the barrel warehouse.
Who's the sassy barrel?
Who's the one that really
yeah. gives you attitude? Nope.
It's a lot of when they're ready. It's a lot of when we need to put a blend together. But I try to cycle through most of the barrels in the course of a year.
Mm-hmm.
Select sample sizes out of the batches that are in barrels and just kind of play with little bench blends and see, you know, basically building a palette of flavors that are available upstairs, and then I'll retain samples and play with them over time.
Okay.
And just kind of figure out what we want to do. We're still finding our feet and our flavor profiles, and we're, just going to keep building new things out of the palette of available flavors we've got up there.
Yeah. Where do you get your barrels?
So we've got a mix of Barrel Mill out of Avon, Minnesota,
okay.
some Black Swan, another Minnesota company, a short-lived one, Atlas Barrel. We're going to start looking more further afield over the next couple of years to get a wide selection of different cooperages and toast levels and char levels. But the majority of the stuff we have are Barrel Mill.
Okay. All right. So you're working on your different blends. Who else is involved with that process?
The whole team.
Okay.
We get together and when I've got things that I'm excited about and it's time to try it, and I try to herd the kittens together and get everybody.
That's gotta be a fun day.
Get a little time going. And
I mean, that was fun last June. I feel like I stumbled upon a little gathering of the kittens, and we were trying a bunch of different things. I was like, wow, this is a nice way to end. I think it was just a random Wednesday. But is that kind of the thing? I think it's always fun to taste something with multiple different people in the room, because everybody's palate is a little different and everybody's sensory memories are a little different. And what you get out of something, your sensory memory is going to be different from my sensory memory. And I would imagine that kind of collaboration is really exciting, but also incredibly helpful.
We don't even just taste the things that we produce. We taste what other people make too.
Yeah.
I just got back from a trip to Santa Fe and literally hauled home three different cases of agave spirits. Regina and I were here last night tasting through some of them. We won't make an agave spirit here, but when it comes down to it, we love to be inspired by other things, other ingredients that other spirit producers are using. And that can spark something that starts a whole conversation about something else. We love to try other people's whiskeys as we're developing our whiskey profile that we like. And the same thing, I mean, I think there are so many great producers in Minnesota, and there are so many great producers across the country and the world. So it's fun to be inspired by the things that they are making.
What have been the fan favorites of the cocktails? I know that I really liked
the prefix.
Is that the one with the rye and the dark chocolate?
Yes.
Yes.
That's our number one seller.
With the big, and it came with a little thing of sage.
Sage, yeah.
Yes. That was really good.
Thank you.
That was really good and so balanced. That's the one thing. I think that not all, I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to say where, but like I've ordered a cocktail and it was just like straight up juicy juice, sugary juice. And I'm like, I can't really find the spirit, which I get it's an amalgamation of different things, and maybe my palate is not where it should be, but I was just blown away by how balanced. I think I was here with a friend. We tried three different ones, and each cocktail, you're like, oh yeah, there's a spirit. There's this, there's so much going on. What have been the favorites so far that people just absolutely rave about?
I would say the prefix is absolutely at the top of that list, especially for our dark spirit fans. The Heads Will Roll, which is a blackberry and charred rosemary bramble, which does have some of Liza's favorite, the sky blue liqueur in there. It's got a nice herbal vegetality to it, which is beautiful.
Herbal vegetality would make a great punk band name. Yeah, right? I think that'd be really fun.
Dan, did you have the egg when you came in?
Oh, that was
Courtney had that. Yes. With the
devil's egg.
The one that was on fire. I was like, whoa, this is crazy.
Oh, not the bird bath.
Oh, no, that's that she had the bird bath.
So the devil's egg is a jello shot.
Didn't.
That looks like a deviled egg. Oh. Yeah. Yes, and we call
it egg.
It is.
Is it egg? That was a lesson in what can I get away with on this menu? What will they let me do? They let me make not only did they let me make a menu item, jello shot, but it really does look like a deviled egg. But it is, it's coconut and passion fruit, and it's delicious.
Well, the next time I come in, I'll have to try that.
Yeah.
Because I like jello shots and deviled eggs, so that's the best of both worlds right there.
Mm-hmm. But it's a very sensory, confusing experience.
It is. We've had a couple of guests that come in with egg aversions, and they will have friends buy it for them just to see their reaction as they taste it. Greta did an amazing job of emulating the texture of egg white in a real deviled egg, and it's one of my favorite things on the menu because it's kind of a mind melt, right?
Well, how would you even do that? I mean, if you don't want to give away a trade secret, that's fine. But like, just with the jello, was the jello the egg part?
The white part is the jello shot, and then we did like a creme pat, a passion fruit creme pat for the yolk. It's texturally like it does feel like a deviled egg, but it's desserty. You're actually eating almost like a panna cotta.
Oh, sure. You know? Okay. That makes sense.
And then what are you zesting on the top again?
It does have lime zest and then a little Persian lime, which is...
Did you say Persian lime?
Persian lime.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's this... if you think about like sun-dried tomatoes, this would be... They're smaller limes that are dehydrated or dried and they're black. So it sort of looks like pepper on the top. But
that's so crazy.
Yeah.
I'm learning all sorts of stuff. This is great.
Yeah, it's fun for us to play with flavor profiles and textural experiences. Mm-hmm. Even the baked Itasca cocktail with the beautiful meringue on top of it. What I love about that cocktail, and Greta talked a little bit about it earlier, is that if you drink it through the meringue, you have this beautiful sweetness and creaminess that comes through it. Or if you drink it just on the cocktail side, you get this gorgeous tart layer. So it takes you through this beautiful roller coaster of flavor profiles.
Yeah.
Two people in our tasting team, two of the kittens, are not big sweet drinkers. I'm one of them. So I'm really sensitive to cocktails that are overly sweet.
Yeah.
And balance for the team is something that we really, really look for. I think our menu is balanced and has something for everybody on it, which is really fun.
I think that's why I like the prefix so much, because it wasn't just chocolate syrup. Like it had like those like, you know, you buy the 78% cacao chocolate, you get that in that in that drink. That was really... Yeah, I mean, when it comes to spirits that people are buying or can buy,
we'll be hitting distribution in January, though, with Vinacopia.
So how many of are the seven spirits that you mentioned earlier all available for purchase as well?
Yes.
Okay. Which of those seem to be the top seller? What are people enjoying there?
I think it's really been a mix. It depends on what the guest is drinking in their cocktail and what they fall in love with. A couple of things that have been surprising to me. We make a gin that I think is for the person that thinks they don't like gin. Our gin leads with cardamom and coriander and almost this Meyer lemon backbone. It has juniper in it, but it's not a prominent flavor profile.
Okay.
It's more of the skeletal fixture of what the spirit is. So we've had a lot of guests, and I have a fun time in the dining room when a guest says, oh, I hate gin, bringing a taste of ours and watching them purchase a bottle. So that's been one that I think has surprised people. But across the board, I think it's every guest has a flavor profile that they like that's different.
Sure.
But I will say we've gotten a really nice response from guests We purposely priced all of our spirits and our cocktails in a very neighborhood affordable price point. Our most expensive spirits are in the mid-40s range, and our vodka is only $23.
That's not
so
bad.
We really wanted the home bartender here in our neighborhood, or maybe somebody that's going through the economical struggle that the world is going through right now, to be able to still take home one of our bottles and have them on their back bar. And that was really important. And we want the bartenders around our neighborhood to pour us behind the bar and be able to use our spirits their cocktails. So we're excited to get into the market and to talk to some of our friends and see our spirits kind of pass through the neighborhood to people that we love.
Well, it started as a one-night stand. I had 2 pints for a lonely hand. Bounce back like a rubber band. 4, 3 pints. Drink a fourth in a faraway land, but I couldn't make it a single man. So I married me this beer right here. A pint, a 1 pint stand.
Hey, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you're enjoying a One Pint Stand. My aim is to help spread the word about craft beer. Enjoying craft beer is a passion of mine, and I love chatting about it with other people. A One Pint Stand has a goal of helping breweries tell their stories. I love to get out in and beyond Minnesota to visit breweries, beer bars, and meet other interesting beer people. If you're also into those things, you're probably going to want to keep tabs on the show. So go ahead and follow a One Pint Stand on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, and Mastodon. I also started a TikTok account because I was tired of Charles calling me a boomer for not having one. I would also appreciate any and all positive reviews on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts to help make it easier for other craft beer listeners to find us. If you want to be a supporter of the podcast with some of the extra change you find in your couch cushions, I have a Patreon. There are 3 different monthly levels of support, and they're priced at $1, $3, or $5 a month. If you pledge at the $3 or $5 monthly level, you get some pretty cool perks. So go to patreon.com and search A One Pint Stand to check it out. We're up to 28 supporters, and I'm absolutely thrilled for what that means for the show. If you like reading about craft beer, check out my written work on aonepintstand.com. I love to write, and that's where you can find my written content covering both the local craft beer happenings as well as my craft beer travels. I truly appreciate you listening and taking time to enjoy our stories. Before we head back to the show, I want to talk about this episode's sponsor, Town Hall Brewery. Since 1997, Town Hall Brewery has been a unique gathering space. There are 4 different locations: Town Hall Tap, Town Hall Station, Town Hall Lanes, and the mothership, Town Hall Brewery, offers something for everyone. Whether you're in the mood for a fantastic craft beer or an eye-popping selection of bourbon, you will be able to find something that will make you smile. Their outstanding food is made with care and creativity. I'm partial to the Brewer's Double, but that's just the tip of the culinary iceberg. If all that wasn't enough to get you excited, their Barrel Age Week is right around the corner. This peerless celebration of barrel-aged excellence will take place at Town Hall Brewery starting on Thursday, February 12th and going through Sunday, February 22nd. During this time, not only will they have a plethora of barrel-aged beers on tap, but there will be 2 different beer dinners, as well as a brunch where the brewers will chat about barrels and their process for putting together the event. For more information about dates and tickets, go to townhallbrewery.com. Now, back to the show.
How about a beer?
I know that when a brand goes away, there's always confusion. You purchased the distillery, but it's in the same place. So I think with that comes a lot of questions and confusion. But what has been the... Has it been a challenge to try to get people to realize this is a brand new thing, despite the fact that the address has not changed, or has that not been an issue?
So I'll speak from my experience, and then others feel free to chime in. But I've been very happy to see the feedback from the people that were regulars at 11 Wells. It's been a really awesome experience for them to come in and realize that we're just embracing this space. And you'll see that there's nods to 11 Wells throughout our space. We have tables that still have the 11 Wells emblem on them, as well as other bars and restaurants. We've incorporated and preserved items from those bars and restaurants. So we are trying to pay respect to those bars and restaurants that are not open anymore. And I think Greta, you haven't talked about this yet, but our menu is actually inspired by bars and restaurants that aren't open anymore. So each cocktail has some sort of inspiration from a place that we've loved collectively. It's not a remake of a drink that has been in another location, but there is an inspiration there. So when I'm walking around and talking with people and they say, we used to come to 11 Wells, we used to be regulars there, we love it here, we're going to be regulars here as well. And so it's been wonderful.
And I also think it was challenging for the 11 Wells team. They had a very small shoestring budget. And
sure.
These types of buildings are expensive to renovate. So I think a lot of guests were hoping that eventually somebody would renovate and put the bar into the big space, and guests are happy to see that. I'll totally piggyback on what Regina said. We pay a lot of honor to bars and restaurants that are no longer with us. Our heritage in hospitality has come from memories or moments or inspiration with working with other restaurateurs. So we love honoring that. And the same thing is true of being in the building that was the Blacksmith Shop and was 11 Wells. We want to honor the people that came before us in every space. So it's been great to see the positive feedback and see so many people in the neighborhood want to support us.
That's a perfect segue into my next question. You know, the east side of St. Paul is very like working class. And I think that when I think working class and I think cocktail room, what does that Venn diagram look like? What have you done here at the Crowbar to make people want to come in, show them that like, hey, this is not like, this is, like you said, come as you are. This is a space for you. And the people that have the roots in the community, I mean, if they ever open up a really cool place in Como Park, I know me and all my neighbors will patronize the hell out of it because people are proud of their neighborhoods. It's nice to have something fun to be able to go not drive too far to. How have you kind of like opened your doors and what's that relationship with your immediate community like?
Well, I think we're lucky, given the fact that Regina and I both have ties to St. Paul Brewing and that company, that we've gotten to know a lot of our neighbors already in this community. But I think the best way to start to answer that long question would be to talk about Volière and why we named the distillery Volière Spirits. So Volière is the French and German word for the aviary. And if you look at the east side of St. Paul, it's been a gathering of immigrants that have come into this neighborhood again and again and again through the 1800s and 1900s and even now. And we're very, very proud of that heritage. So when we think about the name the aviary or Volière, we liken the east side neighborhood to a nest. And if you think about a nest and a bird in a nest, nests often over time are torn apart, pulled apart by wind, weather, outside circumstances, and that bird has to rebuild with the things that are remaining around it. And so the Eastside community is very, very much like that. I think they are resilient. I think there are a lot of artists and amazing humans that live in this neighborhood and are trying to make it work with the remnants of what was here beforehand. And again, we're honored to be a part of that heritage, and we're doing the exact same thing here. So already we've had some team members from Brunson's and Tongue in Cheek that have popped in to see us, and we do the same thing. I had my lunch break meeting last week over at checking out Chance's new food or new restaurant that they just put in, their new kitchen.
Okay.
So we like to do that symbiotic relationship building. We are members of ESABA. We did some great networking with a lot of their community. That's the Eastside Area Business Association.
Okay.
So we care about this neighborhood and we want to welcome them in. As far as the space goes, I think that when you come in and you see upcycled furniture and you see these kind of vignette groupings that are around the space or unusual art, Regina has some amazing pieces from her family's history. We partnered with some local artists. It's kind of eye candy right in here.
Yeah.
No matter where you sit, there's something to look at and see. And we wanted to be reflective of the community and things that are a part of that. So I think we've brought in through memorabilia and moments of restaurants that have closed that we honor and we show about our space, or fun, quirky things like our confessional space where people can shout their feelings into the world and put them on paper within that space. There's some juicy ones in there.
I like to check them out every week.
Yeah, I saw a social media post and it's like, oh, there's way more.
You're going to have to go walk now. In there and look for sure.
That'll be interesting.
But for us, we're trying to create something that's creative. The East Side is a very vibrant music community. We have a great relationship with Cadence. We've purchased vinyl from Cadence. I could see them maybe doing a DJ spinning night with us in the future. We want to do community events with our community, and you're going to see us really caring about it and giving back because it's important to us. And again, that affordable price point of having mocktails that are only $8, but have the same amount of thought and process behind them, or having cocktails that are $11 to $15. We didn't want to price $20 to $25 cocktails on the menu because not only do I think that most hospitality workers who are frequenting us a lot right now, they can't afford that right now in this economy, the average person can't either. So we just want to be a cool gathering space. Whether you drink or you don't drink, we want you to step inside our living room. It's kind of like Regina and I get to throw a really cool basement party every time we come to work.
It's all about good vibes.
Yeah.
And that's what people say. They say cozy, comfortable. Those are the things that we hear over and over again, and that's what we were going for. And there's all these vignettes around that feels like you're in someone's living room.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, like you're in the living room from the 80s and, you know, your friend's basement.
Yep.
So it is come as you are. You feel equally at home here, regardless of if you're dressed up, if you're not. So we think people feel very comfortable here.
I think the thing you said about the price point is really important. I mean, there's such a range depending on which distillery or which cocktail room you're going to. And
even what brewery you go and hang out at, let's be honest.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the cost of everything is really high. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I think everybody feels it no matter what level you're at, you notice. And so like one of the big concerns I have is like, again, I worry about craft beer. Is craft beer pricing people out? I mean, the idea that beer is supposed to be in every person's drink. If you're charging $11 for a beer, that's every person does not fit into the equation. I was really happy to see when I came in, I looked at the prices and I don't know how you're doing it, but like you're doing it. And I think that's important because that price point can be like the gatekeeper for people having different types of experiences. And I think that from the price point and the value and the quality, and then when you come in and there's so much, I was probably the worst company my first time here because I think I have undiagnosed adult ADHD. I could not stop looking around at all the stuff. And I was like, oh, look at that. And I kept wandering off. I was like, you got the bird and the doily art on the wall. I was like, how does that even work? What's going on here? But there's so many different things to look at. And I like the different seating areas. I just think it's so much fun. And I it didn't feel snooty. I mean, there's definitely places. I was at a place with a friend, and I looked at the menu, and I'm like, I don't know what the hell's going on. Like, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't know what any of these words mean. I don't know what was going on here. I think this is going to be a one and done. And we had to get to a brewery where I was in my more familiar environment. But I didn't feel that weird sense of like, I don't know if this is a place for me. And that's not a good place to be. You know, you don't want to feel that.
I love seeing your passion and emotion about it because the emotion is the best part. When I was very young in this industry, I had a really great mentor. And he used to say that if you can create emotion with your guests, if the vibe, the feel, the flavor profiles, what you hear, what you smell, if it all hits and it all is meeting that same measure, you create an emotional connection with somebody that brings them back again and again. And I hope that the warmth of our team does that that too.
Yeah.
When we talked about hospitality, we kept saying, we want it to be like Cheers. We want to know your name. We want to know that you're a gin drinker or you're a bourbon drinker or you're a rye drinker. And we want to know your flavor profile. We want to know what kind of events you like to attend. So when we do something in the space, we can invite you personally. We want to get to know our neighbors. And I think in this day and age when technology has really replaced human connection and then pandemic happened, people are starting to crave again that connection.
Yeah.
And for people that don't imbibe right now, I have a friend that is so sick of going to bars and restaurants where she gets charged $20 for a mocktail that's really just juice and seltzer water. So
yeah.
We just want to create a space that, yeah, that everybody feels connected in. So seeing your passion really makes me smile. And we see that from a lot of our guests that just walk the space for the first few minutes before they even sit down and look at the menu.
Yeah.
Even the covers of our menus are retired aprons from servers and bartenders in our hospitality
Okay.
past. So there's lots of little rabbit holes to go down in honor in the space.
I love Easter eggs.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them. So there's a lot of them here. The menu, I thought, like, for, you know, some places when they open out of the gates, it's like, okay, they have a more limited thing. Your menu is quite robust.
Oh, thank you.
And I was like, so there has to be those times when, you know, the people, the bartenders, the people, you know, servers encounter the whole, like, deer in the headlights when they're like, what is this? This is a lot. I'm sure you, based on everybody I've met, either working at St. Paul Brewing or the Crowbar, you hire good people. So, like, what extra, you maybe don't have to do too much of this, but what extra things do you have to prepare your staff for when they get that deer in the headlights look to kind of de-stress and be like, okay, here's, because I know, like, I don't know if it's easier with beer. I know it's different because somebody coming into to St. Paul Brewing say, what do you have that's similar to a Coors Light? Well, that's easy. You got the Shams. Yep. That's the starting point. How does that work here at the Crowbar?
Well, I think what we have done in every person on our team is a bartender. It makes it a lot easier for us to talk about the menu in a way that I think is still very approachable and friendly. It's our special interest, and so it's what gets us excited to talk about. It's what we're excited to talk about. And I think from a guest perspective, listening to, I don't know about you, but when I listen to somebody talk about what makes them excited, then I get excited about that thing too. Even if I don't know what that word means or I don't know what it means yet, I trust that that person is probably going to tell me in a non-judgmental way. And that's what we do. If somebody is sitting down and, you know, I haven't seen it a whole lot. They might, in terms of like overwhelm with the menu, okay, what should I have? What do you have with gin? Or what do you have with bourbon? You know, we can obviously walk them through that. Well, I like everything is the dreaded answer. Okay, well, could we narrow it down a little bit tonight? Yeah. Like, what are we in the mood for? Are we feeling like you have a base spirit you want to try? Okay, then we go from there. Or are we feeling citrusy? Are we feeling... are we feeling decadent? You know, you give them words and then they can go, actually, yes, that's the kind of mood I'm in. And then it kind of helps inform their decision.
That's really interesting to hear you say that. Mm-hmm. Are you in a citrusy mood? Yeah. Like, that's such a, like, oh, duh. Like, I would never think about that. I would just probably be like, well, do you have gin or a spirit? But, like,
do you want something light?
Okay.
Do you want something, you know, fruity can be kind of a tricky one. It's like, well, what kind of fruity?
Do you want something spicy and complex?
We have
drinks that read like that.
Do you want to be adventurous?
Do you want something a little bit esoteric? Like, are you feeling kind of like rolling the dice right now? Because you know, we have a little bit of something for everybody by design. But it's just, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Chocolat, but like trying to dial in on that person and what they're looking for is the fun part.
What we have been blessed with our guests, and I think it's because it's such a fun atmosphere, and I think the team here really cares to get to know our guests, that they often will just put trust in us after their first cocktail. They might choose their first, but I can't tell you how many tables have taken personal recommendations from me and just said, you know what, these were both, the first round was so great, what are the things that I can't miss? We drink everything, and that, and sometimes that question is great because you can then fill in the gaps of the things that we love.
Yeah. Again, yeah, establishing that trust with the guest is is crucial because, yeah, maybe they were feeling overwhelmed, but now they're kind of game.
Yeah, now they're like, they're, the next drink I want, it needs to be set on fire.
Yep.
And you have
and
several.
I can do that.
How long did it take you to create the menu?
That's a big question because we had several proposed opening dates. From the time that I actually sat down and started speccing it out, maybe a month and a half. Yeah, because I do draw everything. I think we talked about this when we first met. I kind of draw everything and make sure that there's everything is represented. Like there's an equal number of spirits featured. You know, we're not. Okay, this isn't entirely a bourbon menu or a gin menu. There's a little bit here and there. And going with that. But, that it's well-rounded.
You're talking about length of menu.
Length of menu.
How long took it for you to create the menu?
Well, yeah. I guess a month and a half from when I sat down
to
make everything.
So when you sit down to do it, are you thinking, okay, we have to have something like maybe juicy citrus, pithy citrus, zesty citrus, then we have to have like something a little creamy with coconut cream, maybe something tropical, maybe like.
I'm thinking, when is this menu dropping?
Okay.
when is this menu dropping? How many spirit forward options do we have? How many light, how many Colin style cocktails are on this menu? Are there, is that too many? Is that not enough? Mm-hmm. Based on what time of year we're opening? Where are we serving it? Like, what are we serving it? Like, there's a lot of logistical things. And then there's sometimes I just want to do that thing. So in order to have that thing, what else do I need to include? So,
okay.
And I think you're thinking about prep and things like that as well, right? How labor intensive is this? Can we prep it? How long will it stay?
How long will it take to prep it? Yeah. How long does it take to garnish it? Am I getting too out of hand with the garnishes? Because, it all has to come out.
Yeah, you're not doing a tableside Caesar salad. You're just, come out.
That'd be great
pretty
with our Bloody Mary.
Oh, yeah. the team will kill me.
Even the glassware, I think, is interesting because we're a tiny little bar. So we repurposed Erte's bar and refaced it with bourbon staves. But this is a tiny little makeshift bar for them to work out of, especially coming summer months. So Greta's summer menu, she has to consider doubling our capacity, what things can be made very quickly, what are some fun takes on things that can be made quickly. And we're having some secret conversations about that stuff right now.
Okay.
Where we will, again, think we'll bring some amusement from our guests with some of the retro ideas that we bring back on the patio this year. I think guests are going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, are you anticipating, once people are able to go outside, is that kind of when we're going to see like a shift in some of the drinks, or where are you kind of thinking like, well, right now I think some of these drinks just can be year-round offerings?
I don't really think about hard shifts in terms of removing a drink. It's sort of what we discussed earlier with, this doesn't make sense to have in August the same way that it does in January. And also working with this creative team who also have a lot of ideas. In fact, we've tried some things already.
Tomorrow's New Year's Eve. Some of those things you'll see popping up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm really excited to have their input and their, their imagination to work with or work alongside to make those things happen. But we might just phase things out, replace.
Some things might stay.
And some things might stay.
I know there's always like snafus or kind of like things that are, they happen and you just have to laugh about them because it's like so absurd or so ridiculous. What are any of those that you're like, oh, we can laugh about this now, but at the time, like, caramba. What was
I think our biggest challenge has honestly been getting open.
Yeah.
We had a moving timeline.
Okay.
And because of that moving timeline, we fully built out our beautiful patio that our first guests got to see covered in snow, which was kind of was a great example of that, right?
When were you supposed to?
We were hoping summer, hoping late summer, early fall.
Geez, and then okay, yeah,
permitting other pieces, old buildings, the permitting system going down in the city of St. Paul and getting hacked.
Some
things had to be resubmitted by hand. There were all sorts of little fun things that came along the way. And then the final piece was I had planned a vacation to Vietnam and thinking that we would be well open by November. But unfortunately, the timing of that worked. So I came back and we opened a week later. But I was happy to be here and present.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you missed the whole final tasting of everything.
Yeah, I did miss the final tasting.
We sent
of the
her
menu.
Pictures of the devil's egg and multiple other things so she could appreciate it while she was in Vietnam.
It was great. But that's what's amazing about this team. I think there is such a good symbiotic relationship between us. We all bring our strengths. We have very different personalities. I joke all the time in a women-owned company that Seth has to have a great sense of humor to put up with the rest of us all the time, the kittens.
We're awesome.
Yep.
But it's a really fun team, and the long hours are worth it because we think we're creating something special, and we just hope that guests see the love that we've put into it. Because I think in whether it's the spirits that we're making, the cocktails that we're producing, the space and the things that we're honoring, or the service, or just the camaraderie and hospitality, I think guests feel it because they keep commenting, and they're writing really nice reviews right now, and they're coming back again and again. And we have two couples that we have literally seen. We've been open for 4 weeks. We literally have seen them 3 to 4 times a week, and we're only open 4 days a week.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they're coming in trying something different or finding their favorites every day. It's so cool to see that.
And what are the hours? We should have said that at the very beginning. I'm sorry. This is an amateur hour.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday open at 4. We close at 11 those 3 days. And then Saturdays we open at noon, and we close at midnight.
Okay. I want to know what each of you is the most proud of when it comes to the Voliere Spirits and the Crowbar.
I'm proud and honored to have been brought back after the purchase and helping shepherd through the rebranding and redevelopment of a lot of our flavor profiles to better show the personality of the space that we were building. Just playing in the flavor lab and making all kinds of fun stuff and getting to taste them and get them out to people. My one priority is making something that tastes like having another one. So
Drinkability is huge.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
I feel really grateful and proud to have been invited onto this team. I've only been with the company for about a year. So to have been brought on and trusted with, this is a big deal, I feel really grateful to be a part of the team and to be able to work all of these and bring in more very creative and smart friends to make more things for people to enjoy.
I'll echo what Greta said. For me, it's the humans. It's the human connection of the people at the table and what we're producing. It's us collectively being each able to bring our creativity to a very inclusive group. No idea is a stupid idea in this group. And some of our stupid ideas have been our best ideas. And that's the best part about working in hospitality. I'm grateful that Regina and I got connected through my connection through Rob. I think we've been able to do some really fun things, and we're just getting started. And that's the best part for me.
Love it. And then I feel like all of these elements have all come together to create something amazing. So I can't pick one thing, because I feel like if the spirits weren't at the level that they were, the cocktails weren't at the level that they were, this space didn't have the vibe that it does, you wouldn't have the same experience. So I feel like all of these elements, I'm just so proud of how it has all come together to create something very unique and an experience like no other that I've seen to date. So,
yeah, that's all fabulous to hear. Well, this is, again, I can't wait to come back again, but being here opening night and just seeing the absolute wow factor of this space and then drinking the balanced cocktails that were all different and all unique. And I'm not forget the one that was served in a bird's egg that was lit on fire. That was really cool just because, you know, who doesn't love a little pyrotechnics for your nightcap? But I'm excited to see what other things you do. I can't wait to sit outside on the patio and drink something fun when it's sunny out and warm. So,
amen, brother.
Yeah. I want to thank all of you for taking time. This has been a lot of fun. This has been an on-location episode of A One Pint Stand from the Crowbar. Drinking, having Voliere spirits. Cheers.
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 I really hope you enjoyed my conversation with the team from the Crowbar. We had a great time, and I think that they are doing some dynamic cocktails that showcase both balance and ingenuity. I can't wait to get back there again. I think that the ability to create a cocktail lounge that is not at all pretentious is easier said than done, and the Crowbar is definitely that. It's very much come as you are, which is right up my alley. I urge you to check it out for yourself. If you happen to be a Patreon supporter, I'm sure that you really enjoyed the stories that were shared during the Patreon segment. You know, if you need some laughs, consider joining the Patreon, because there's always good, hilarious extra content. Now, I want to give a special thank you to Brad Ashton, Marcus Dodson, Chuck Dorsey, Vicky Epper, Daniel Fisher, Todd Fitzloff, Laura Fleischfresser, Dave Giefer, Matt Holton, Cable Lefto, Dave Long, Ben Michaels, Brent Newman, Bree Smith, Jesse Storms, Sarah Cry, Cal Vandyhoof, and Brian Wu for being Kegstander level supporters of the One Pint Stand Patreon. You've all shown incredible generosity, and I'm grateful for it. Cheers to you all. I want to thank the band Quirky for creating a nice little jingle for the podcast. I just love how it turned out, and it adds such a great touch to the show. Thank you so much. Now, before I sign off, once again, I want to thank Town Hall Brewery for sponsoring this episode. Whether you're a frequent visitor to their brew pubs, or you have yet to darken their doorstep, you should stop in for a drink and a bite while you relax in a Minnesota craft beer institution. When you stop in, tell them A One Pint Stand sent you. With that, this has been another episode of A One Pint Stand, a Minnesota craft beer podcast where the pants stay on, but the caps come off. Cheers.
A couple terms. I've learned what shrub mean. Everything I knew about shrubs came from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So now to hear it was like the world's oldest soda is interesting to me.